Welcome and thanks for tuning in. Now, if you're a customer service advocate, one who believes in the customer experience, well, you've come to a well of information that will confirm your strategies and help to create a new and powerful commitment to your customer. Hey, thanks for tuning in to Remarkable Results Radio. This is the resource that leads the industry with important on-demand audio that can literally change your personal direction and the course of your business. Aftermarket influencer Carm Capriato here, your aftermarket podcast guy. Hey, get ready for author John DeJulius and business coach Alan Beach as we talk about John's book, Customer Service Revolution. This is a highly recommended read from me, and you can find it on the books page on my website. John DeJulius is an authority on world-class customer experience, and he believes teams need to have empathy and compassion for their customers, which builds relationships and creates emotional connection and brand loyalty. Organizations across America use his philosophies and systems for creating world-class service. I thank Alan Beach for making the connection with John and his contribution to the episode. Hey, before we listen to John and Alan, let me thank Napa Pro Image for their continued support. Napa Expo has been officially rescheduled, and you know that, February 1st through the 4th, 2021. Las Vegas is going to be painted blue and gold as Team Napa puts on the fabulous event that was planned prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. Napa wants to thank everyone for understanding the event postponement and sends well wishes to you and your families. Rest assured, Team Napa is as energized and invested as ever in Napa Expo, and we look forward to hosting you in February. Learn all about delivering genuine hospitality with John DeJulius's 5 E's and giving the customer what they can't live without.
FORD, right? And it's not about the car. And if you know two or more things of anyone's Ford, you not only built a relationship, you own the relationship, because to each and every one of us, our Ford is our hot buttons. So it's family, occupation, recreation, and dream.
John DeJulius says you can't outmarket or outspend your competition. You need to outlove them with an exceptional customer experience. John says that exceptional experiences is one of the only sustainable differentiators among competitors. Learn about secret service systems and soft skills training. You have to know your customers even at the tiniest level, like learning what their coffee preferences are. You can out-service the competition. You know, exceeding their expectations ensures having repeat customers. This education in audio form is the reason I podcast. Find the key talking points and bios for John DeJulius and Alan Beach at remarkableresults.biz/E559. Hey, a warm welcome to two actually incredible guests. Alan Beach is with us, former business shop owner and business coach. Interviewed Alan, probably a month ago. Excellent episode. Thanks so much for that.
Great. Good to be here, Carm.
And here we're talking, we're shooting the breeze, and he goes, how'd you like to interview John DeJulius? And I said, are you kidding me? I mean, that book that he wrote, that Customer Revolution book that he wrote? I says, yeah. He says, well, let me work on it. Well, John is here, and he's sitting in the studio with us, and it's incredible. John, welcome.
Hi, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you, Carm.
So appreciated. Listen, I'm a customer service guy. I just realized that if we didn't have the customer, we didn't have the right attitudes to serve the customer, we didn't have a customer experience, we got nothing. Before we start, we get into the real meat here, I just want to encourage everyone, Customer Service Revolution, it's a book. 5 years ago, John wrote it, and it has such impact still today. So anyone who has never turned the corner in making that customer culture revolution happen in your place, you've got to read this book, and you need to read it as if it was an encyclopedia or a how-to book, and just do it. The thing I think in the big successful companies today is that they'll buy this book for their team, they'll read it together, and they'll slowly write the processes and implement what they have to do as a team, and not force this thing from top down, but pull it up from the ranks. And that's the only thing I think customer culture change happens in a business today. You got to have total buy-in. Now, agree with me or not later, guys, but Alan, you were telling me the story, which is why we're here, how much John's teaching changed your business.
I was at a convention when John's organization was the keynote speaker. And I had been investing in my business for years. And looking for the extra add-on and trying to find out what that would be. I'd switched over to German cars. We'd service German cars. I was having incredible success with that. I was always looking for what could I do next? And it had come down to the point where I was investing in equipment. I was investing in capital, always trying to find what was next. And I heard one of John's staff talk from the stage, and it was like a smack right across the forehead. And I thought, I had never thought of that. I had never thought about actually investing in customer experience. And we oftentimes think, and John will talk about this, but we oftentimes think it's just customer service. You know, it's just smiling and doing the extra things. Well, no, it's an awful lot more than that. It's about being really, really intentional in the experience that you deliver. And when you deliver that experience, the rewards are so huge. It's not like turning on a CRM. It's these people come back. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I call that a V8 moment that you had, and then you ultimately did something about it. John, look, we are technicians. We open up a shop, and we say, hey, listen, I'm good at what I know. I can fix cars. Customers start coming in, and we think they'll keep coming. Unknown to many people, John, it's a science to keep them coming back. And that's why you're so damn good at this.
Well, I was the same. I was no different. Almost 30 years ago, me and my wife opened up a 4-chair hair salon. And she was this great technician. And we had the 3 no's. No customers, no employees, and no money. If you had a bad arm, you could hit, you know, throw a rock in any direction and hit, you know, several of our competitors. And, you know, quite frankly, we couldn't outspend them, outmarket them, build a fancier location at the time. But we could create such an incredible, compelling guest experience. And even back then, this is in 1992, we didn't want to be known as the best experience in the salon industry. Because, Carm, if you or your wife comes in today and get your hair cut, you then don't go out and go across the street to one of our competitors and compare us and say, oh my God, they're so much better, so much worse, whatever. You don't need a salon service for a few weeks or a few months. But where do you go? You go to the, you know, car place. You go to the doctor's office. You meet your buddy for lunch. And you start comparing. And you're saying, God, I wish they were as friendly and remembered me like the last place, or vice versa. So that became our obsession early on. Now, fast forward 27 years later, and we realized we don't have to outmarket, outspend, outbuild, that the customer experience is really compelling. So I think one of the mistakes that we all make is we pound our chest and say, we're the best in our industry. Well, that's kind of irrelevant because, you know, I'm not comparing you to your industry. I'm comparing yourself to my other experiences I have.
I don't think I've ever heard, John, and explained that way. They come in, have their car serviced, and they may not have to come back for 3, maybe even 6 months. They're not driving a lot, or it's a fairly newer car. And the way they relate to the next time they need service is to go back to how they felt when they were there the first time or the last time.
The one thing I love about the aftermarket industry is I compare it to elective surgery in the medical. Right. And so, you know, we've worked with hospitals and dentists and eye doctors and all that. Like car dealerships, they're a necessity that people have to grudgingly come to. And they should, but sometimes they don't have to be great at the patient experience because people have to come back and get their teeth cleaned. Same in a dealership, even though we can choose other dealerships the next time or whatever. But the aftermarket is like elective surgery. I don't have to get LASIK eye surgery or Botox or, you know, my teeth fixed or all these things. And that's why I love working with elective surgery, because they work so hard. They know that, you know, if they aren't on their A game, they're going to, you know, get it handed them. And I feel like aftermarket's the same way. You know, aftermarket business works so much harder at the customer experience because of that same reason. At least I believe. You guys are the experts in that, though.
You know, I want to jump to a question that I had set for later, and that the whole thing is to put yourself in the shoe of the customer. John, you know, great book again, but when you think about a technician who works or a service advisor that works, and it's time for themselves to have some service work done, we shouldn't do it. They should go out and get service so that they can experience what they're competing with from that service experience level. And I know, John, you agree with that. Alan, do you tell your clients that?
Absolutely. In fact, this is one of the things I learned. I went through John's academy. You know, he talks about the fact of, do our service advisors get a chance to see incredible customer experience? Do they ever stay at the Ritz-Carlton? Do they ever travel first class? Do they ever get a chance to buy a vehicle from Lexus? They probably don't. So how are they to know what this incredible experience is all about? How are they to know what it's like to stay overnight at a Ritz-Carlton? So that's where training comes in, and being able to train our people in those different methods that those big chains use to be able to, you know, put a solid lock on our clients to make them stay.
Can we train people that don't have a good service aptitude, John?
Absolutely. You know, I'm living proof, right? You wouldn't have wanted my world-class experience I was capable of delivering at 19, 21, or 25. The wrong compass is to say, treat our customers the way you want to be treated. Because again, you know, I have two kids, you know, one just graduated from college. I have a 28-year-old, a 23-year-old. Great kids. But if you hired them today and said, treat your our customers the way you want to be treated, you know, when they greet your customer around, they're going to be like, hey, what's up, dude? And they'll hand out a fist pump. And, you know, because that's where they're coming from right now. And you'd have to hand them a belt because they're not wearing one and their pants are slipping too low on their hips. But, you know, give them 2 weeks of service aptitude training and they could be rock stars. And it's what Alan said is, you know, most of our front, you know, I didn't, you know, fly first class and stay at five-star resorts, but I was expected to give that type of experience when, you know, in every job I've ever had, and it just was unrealistic. I didn't know what world-class was at the time.
I love the fact that we have Alan, who believes so highly in the customer experience, who is a business coach and a former owner who saw a major change in his life after going through John's Academy. And John, to tell us if we're doing things right or wrong here in this episode as we discuss this. So, Alan, when we talk finance and we talk KPIs and we talk technology and we talk operations, where in your list does the customer experience come in?
That was part of what I really felt changed after I went through John's Academy, because I used to be a process coach and dealing with the process and making sure that all the steps are right. You know, if you don't get the customer's address right, if you don't tell them what time you're going to call them, that's all important. But then over top, almost like a thick layer of icing, needs to be customer experience. It needs to be every part of what we do, because you're actually saying to the client, look, I just really care about you. And I care about the fact that you get the best possible experience in dealing here. It starts with remembering the client and maybe remembering, you know, something special about the client. Maybe, you know, my daughter owns a shop today, and they're an absolute believer in what John does. They were doing a pre-sale inspection, and they found out during the process of the pre-purchase inspection that the husband was buying the car for his wife, and it was designed to be a gift for the wife. So they just took a moment, and they took that nugget and went out and bought a big bowl for the car. And then when the husband came and got the car, there was a nice card inside with a small little gift card and the bow to put on the car. And, you know, that changes everything. That's a relationship now that we have. And we see each other again. And imagine you were the husband in this situation, Carm. You come in next time and you're smiling on your way in.
Are you kidding me? I'll never forget it. It was implanted.
Exactly. And how much did it cost? Oh, maybe $15? And what would you do to have a customer that came back in that way?
You know, I wanted to buy a big bow one time to put on a car, and I couldn't find one anywhere. So somebody's got to start with a bigbow.com thing so that we can get these for these cool experiences. But John, don't you love the way they say process up in Canada? Process?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the thing is that that's not authentic accent. He was born in California. So I don't know how he's all of a sudden invented a
actually
a Canadian,
in Vancouver,
you know, accent.
Yeah, well, he said process and then he said process. I heard him both times and I was conflicted because every coach and trainer in Canada that I know says process. One of the things you mentioned here was caring. I thought of the love word, John. I know you talked about that in the book. I've gotten in front of audiences one time and I says, hey, I want to talk to you about love. and I says, they all start looking at you a little weird. And I said, I want to talk about love as a verb and the action that you show toward each other and your customer. Can you expound on that?
Yeah. You know, I got it from Seth Godin. He said, outlove your competition. And again, you're not going to outspend them. You're not going to outthink them. I mean, you know, there's some pretty good companies out there with bigger resources, but you can't outlove your competition. And there's no greater return on investment in that. We have customer appreciation events, and they're not what you traditionally think of. Let's have cheese and wine and invite all our VIPs in. Our customer appreciation events are internal because, as you know, you know, we can go in the back room to have some coffee and Alan and Carm, my coworkers, are back there. And, you know, Alan's, you know, letting off, oh, that last customer. Oh, my God, they draw. And I'm like, yeah, I had one last week. And then Carm, you throw in your. And all of a sudden they feel like they're 80% of our customers when, in fact, they're probably less than two. So we're trying to, you know, reverse that. And so we'll get, you know, our teams together and say, hey, you know, let's outlove our customer. I want you guys to tell me two or three customers that you love to do business with and why. And Carmel will say, oh, you know, Mrs. Jones, she always comes in and she is the, and she remembers things about me. And I will tell you, if we run late three times a year, it always happens to be when Mrs. Jones is here and she's apologizing to me. Like she is like, you know, the sweetest person. And then, you know, Alan does it and I do it. And then we're go out thinking, man, we are lucky to have the customers we have and the business we have. And so to me, that's our spin on outlove your customer, is to think more how lucky we are and the type of people that give us their business and trust.
Hey, it's Carm here, talking to you about what the Napa Auto Care Center program can do for your business. Now, you probably already know the Napa brand is the most recognized and trusted name in the automotive aftermarket industry. In fact, studies show that 95% of consumers recognize Napa and associate it with quality parts, service, and technical expertise. So why not complete a Pro Image upgrade and take advantage of that? Pro Image is a co-branding program for the exterior and interior of your shop. On the outside, it includes the Napa colors and distinctive Napa signage. While the public may know you as a reliable, locally owned business, a Pro Image upgrade helps set your shop apart from the competition even further. It's also a visual signal to customers and potential customers that you and Napa are partners. Most importantly, Pro Image really works. This co-branding opportunity has helped Napa Auto Care Centers across the country increase their car counts and sales. In fact, those that have completed a Pro Image project enjoy an average 23% sales increase during the first year. Pro Image upgrades are also available for the interior of your shop. A Pro Image interior upgrade transforms your customer waiting area from merely utilitarian to warm and welcoming. The goal is to maintain your shop's independent identity while enhancing the customer's experience. You can get a free look at what a Pro Image exterior and interior upgrade could look like by visiting the Napa Auto Care members site and clicking on the Napa Pro Image link under the Napa Pro Image tab. Or contact your local Napa Auto Parts store. Your servicing Napa store can tell you more about Pro Image, plus the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. What a fabulous idea, John. So many of our really good top shop operators, they'll have a daily scrum. Sometimes for guaranteed, they'll have a weekly meeting. And I'm out here right now to say that in your weekly meeting, at least every couple of weeks, you need to have this customer appreciation discussion. And you talk about learning how to appreciate and love, and, you know, outlove your customer, even though you're not love your competition. Talk about the customer.
So we implemented this with a large corporate client. This corporate client is in the tire space in Canada. We started implementing it, and they called it a plus one. Tell us about your plus one. So one of the guys came in, and he said, Well, you know, I was out doing service calls today. I was driving through a school zone. I saw somebody get hurt in an intersection. So he says, I pulled my big truck up and I turned my lights on. And then I realized that it was actually the crossing attendant that had been hurt. So we got somebody to take care of her. And then I took that little stop sign and I started doing it. So he had his branded truck out there with the big lights on top, and he was helping the little kids across the street. And they called for the attendant to come and help them, the ambulance. Isn't that just caring for your community? Just being there and being real?
Yeah, it creates peer pressure, because now I'm hearing it and I'm thinking, shame on me. Like, I had that opportunity and I didn't think of it. You know, I just drove on by because I needed to get to my next appointment. And like, so I love that internal peer pressure that, you know, I could do that. I have opportunities to do stuff like that. Karim, I'm already Googling Big Bows on Amazon right now, right?
We have three partners right here to do Big Bows. Here's what I wrote down, because this is what happens to me. I listen so intently. I'm always present. And then I wrote down that, am I a what can I do person? And if I'm a what can I do person, I mean, I'm at the top of the customer experience list. I mean, you want me to work for your company and bring the best experience that I possibly can, because I so care about the person that's across from me, the person who's laying on the road injured. What can I do for that person? That's what I believe. And again, John, you have a whole great book that explains this core DNA, you know, in what a great customer service person is. But it's almost like I distilled this down as, I'm a what can I do person. Let's jump into some of the great tactics from your teachings, your books, your principles. Secret Service systems. You know, when I got that, I am looking at the logo of, it looks like, you know, the President's Secret Service. And I'm thinking, you know, where's John going with this? Just phenomenal concept.
Yeah. So Secret Service is just the ability to know, collect customer intelligence and personalize that. To get them to say, how do you do that? How do you know that? So in your world, you know, I've had this happen to me on occasion where, you know, I pick up my car when it's ready and there's, you know, a diet ginger ale, a fresh cold one, because they saw the garbage in my car of an old one, right? Something like that, which is like, you know, to me, that's making price irrelevant. And that's what we want to do. Making price irrelevant doesn't mean that you can double your prices or even raise them 10% in an economy like right now and not lose potential or existing customers. But what making price irrelevant does mean is, based on the experience your brand consistently delivers, I have no idea what your competition charges, because I'm not price shopping it. You're my place, right? You're my place. And you know, some, and I recommend you. And someone says, well, how much do they charge? You know, because my guy, my company charges, and I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, I could look it up, but if it's 10%, I don't care. They've saved me money. They've talked me out of making purchases because it wasn't in the best interest, right? They left money on the table because they said, no, that you don't need all that. All you need is this. And that makes price irrelevant. And another tactical one I really like is that we teach all our employees, and it's been really popular, is, you know, I love asking everyone, you know, hey, who's good at building rapport with a total stranger? And everyone raises their hand, and I call BS. I said, if you met someone, total stranger, an acquaintance, and you spoke to them for 15 minutes to whatever length of time, the way you prove to me that you built a rapport, you built a relationship, is you have to tell me two or more things that they're Ford, F-O-R-D, right? And it's not about the car. And if you know two or more things of anyone's Ford, you not only built a relationship, you own the relationship, because to each and every one of us, our Ford is our hot buttons. So it's family, occupation, recreation, and dreams, right? Family, you know, am I married? Do I have kids? How old are the kids? What activities are they in? Occupation, what do I do? Who do I do it for? What's my title? How long have I been doing it? Recreation is a lot of people's. What do I like to do on the weekends, evenings? I'm into yoga, meditation, running, coaching Little League, and then dreams. What's on my bucket list? What's my, you know, dream vacation, or what's my encore career performance I'm looking to go towards? So getting people to focus on that. You don't even have to ask. A lot of times there's a lot of it. A lot of times in a car, you can see what their recreation is. There might be, you know, equipment in the backseat, skis, golf clubs. I mean, that's, you know, Ford is right there for you. a child seat, right? If I have a child seat, I have a little one. I love talking about my little one. Ask me about my little one, you know, and you could probably tell. And then I'm going to bore you about, you know, for the next 20, you'll regret asking me, right? But I'm going to tell you, oh my God, I got the cutest, smartest baby ever because he, you know, whatever we, you know, we go on.
Ford is about collecting intelligence. It is also about saving it so that you can recall it because you've got thousands of customers. Someone was telling me that they love to beat the customer to the door, open the door for them, and use their name. So they rush to the door and says, "Hey, Mrs. Smith," or "Hi, Sally. Glad to see you here again." Well, they may not know it's Sally, but the CRM program or, you know, past invoices do. So they run the car plate real quick. They know who it is. And with the Ford information, family, occupation, recreation, and dreams, you can literally say, "So, how's that grandbaby?" Or, you know, "How was that trip to Colorado?" Because you're collecting that information. It is not only in my mind, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not just being present today, but it's collecting that data so you can be present forever.
That's Secret Service to the T, right? If I have an 11 o'clock Sally Jones, right, who has an appointment, and a woman pulls in, you're right, we can, you know, check, you know, that she's coming within in a blue Maserati, right? Pretty good chance if someone pulls in with a blue Maserati, right? And she's not wearing a UPS uniform, that's Sally Jones. "Sally, Mrs. Jones, great to see you again." Or, "I understand this is your first time ever here. Let me tell you what we do here, you know, and there's coffee over there and this and all that." And so making sure that we also educate the customer if they are new or returning. Right. I don't have to tell you everything if you've been here before versus if it's your first time. Let me tell you what happens here, why we're different, what we're going to do, you know, all that.
Another great tactic from the book. And that's why I said early on in the beginning of the episode, this is an encyclopedia. It's almost a how-to manual. You just need to take this. You need to get your pen. You need to get your highlighter. And you need to just make this part of your customer culture. Alan, part of John's book about the 5 E's, I couldn't help when he talked about the interviewing tactic around the 5 E's. And as I read this and I started to think about the service advisor, the most important customer-facing position that we have in our business, how interviewing for that position, and so many shop owners says, "Well, I interviewed, they seemed to be nice, they had a great smile, I met him, they were a waitress in a restaurant, and we're going to teach them the automotive because they had that skill, but it doesn't mean they have all the skills that you need." So, John, I would love for you to explain the 5 E's, and I want our listener, to see how it assimilates into the interview for our facing person, our service advisor. So both of you guys talk about this.
The last thing you said, they don't have all the skills you need, and we have to assume that, no matter who they are, what their background is, and that's why the best customer service companies have the soft skill training in there to ensure that we bridge the gap. One of the things I hate is you come to work for me and I say, you know, "Carm, customer service is really important. See the sign in the back and it says exceed customers' expectations. Go do that." And if you tell, you know, 50 people to exceed, go above and beyond, those are platitudes and that will be processed 50 different ways, right? So I believe in removing, you know, a personal interpretation. So we tell people, you know, every interaction, you have to deliver genuine hospitality. Now, again, genuine hospitality will be processed until we define what genuine hospitality is. It's the 5 E's, and they take less than 5 seconds to do. And the first 3 take 1 second simultaneously. Eye contact, enthusiastic greet, ear-to-ear smile. Alan, right? And I just did all 3. Eye contact, enthusiastic greet, ear-to-ear smile. Engage and educate. And so when you define that, you have to do that every time, you know, you come in contact, that's genuine hospitality. Not that young Alan at 21, you tell him to do genuine hospitality and Mr. Capriotto walks in and he does this, a head nod. Well, to him, that's genuine hospitality. No. Here, young Alan, and us, this is genuine. And now he understands it. It's not his fault, you know, unless you make it black and white.
You mean a yo isn't good?
There's some, one of my clients, we created a shirt. Don't bro me if you don't know me. Hey, bro. Hey, bro. Hey, bro. So we had to create a t-shirt saying that. Don't bro me if you don't know me.
When you start to learn what great customer experience and customer service is, you realize the things that you've done for years that really aren't very good. One of the classics was, and it happened very early, and John probably has it happen with every student, is somebody will pay you a compliment or say thank you and will reply with no problem. And John stops and he breaks that down and he says, you're responding with a double negative to the customer. You're saying no problem. And as soon as you realize that you're coming back with a double negative, you stop. You stop just like that and you say no longer. So let's replace what we could do. Why don't we replace it with my pleasure? And what a difference that makes. So John pays me a compliment and says thank you. And I say my pleasure. And I respond in a way that's acknowledging what he says. We're not saying no problem. We're saying thank you. And it's my pleasure to be of service to you.
It was a fabulous segment of the book, John, the never always stuff. I learned so much from it. Never do this, but always do that. And let me just take a step back into the five E's. As I mentioned about the interviewing process for a service advisor, think about what John said. Eye contact, ear-to-ear smile, enthusiastic greeting. If you're not getting that in an interview with a potential service advisor someday, those are check boxes, okay? I mean, you're looking for this stuff in that individual who you're going to put up front to represent the business. And then the engagement. Are you being engaged? You know, I always say I hate to be the person who leads the interview. I'd love to have someone else do it, you know, for me and just let me ask the questions while they respond and almost own the conversation. And then the education piece. John, Alan, one of the big problems we have in our industry is that our customers don't know how we make our sausage, how we get from point A to point B, what it takes to run a business, the technology that requires to fix the vehicle, the training that we need to go to. So if we're educating our customer into what it takes without going too deep, without going over the edge, but being a person of inherent knowledge that I want to give you about the transaction that we just had or about to have, I think that's a connection to an experience.
My thing is, whether you're the receptionist, assistant, expert in the building, anytime someone comes in contact with you, they should walk away, hang up, read the email saying there is no one smarter at their job than that person. Every time, right? I have so much trust in them because of, you know, and it could, again, it could be I'm calling up to make an appointment reservation to get my car, you know, done at your place. And, you know, she says, you know, how does Thursday morning work? Oh, I'm wide open Thursday. Well, understand, Mr. DeJulius, that this takes, you know, X amount of time. Oh, I have no idea. I thought that was just an in and out thing. No, Mr. DeJulius, it actually takes, well, then Thursday won't work for me, right? Because I have, you know, I'm crazy busy starting at 10 o'clock, 10:30. But had she not taken the time and educate me on that, I would have lost my mind come Thursday. What's wrong with you guys? This is supposed to be a 5-minute thing. I think the receptionist even told me it was 5 minutes. She didn't, but you know, that's what I'm thinking because she didn't tell me it. And so, you know, it could be, it doesn't have to just be the consultant, the doctor. Everyone has to demonstrate how smart they are at their specific job. Something else about hiring I want to throw in really quick, because I do believe a lot of this can be taught. The actual love, I say, for people can't be taught. I could teach you to have more empathy. I could teach you to be more curious. You know, I could teach you a lot of things, but I can't. All the training in the world isn't going to change if you don't genuinely love people. Now, you can fool me on an interview, right? So I have found that the best companies have ungameable interview processes. And what I mean by that is if you're interviewing me, I know for a fact that you're going to ask me the typical interview, John, tell me 2 weaknesses you have. I'm ready for that. Well, I'm a perfectionist and I'm a workaholic. Bam, I nailed that, right? We count how many times they smiled, how many times they made eye contact. Now, I do hesitate telling people to audit that because the interviewer has to be possessing the five E's. And if the interviewer, if you're not positive, your person doing the interview is not possessing that, it's unfair to have the, if I'm asking Alan, tell me a time when you went above and beyond. Well, Alan's probably going to match that, even if that's not his normal. But if I'm smiling, if I'm nodding, if I'm showing eye contact and Alan's not giving that back to me, now I could be a little, you know, I could audit. But the other thing, a couple other things is we do group interviews. And we've learned this from Southwest and all the great companies on the first interview. So instead of wasting 6 hours with six people, this could be a receptionist, a customer service rep, whoever it may be, we'll spend 1 hour with all six and we'll go around and ask everyone the same question. All right, I want each of you to tell me a time when you put in a difficult and you went above me, whatever the question is. Now, what the candidates think we're looking at is who comes up with the best answer. So Alan waits for Carm to go and then he has a better answer, and that's not what we're paying attention to. We're seeing what Carm is doing when Alan's talking. Now, is Carm peeking at his iWatch, Apple Watch? Is he bored out of his mind? Or is he smiling, laughing at something funny that Alan said and making Alan, boom, that's what I want. That's what I'm looking for. And one other one I'll throw out there because I just love this example. The CEO of Charles Schwab, Alan Bettinger Jr., when it's a C-level interview and he's involved, what he does is he takes you to his favorite diner for breakfast. And that's where they'll do their interview. And he has the diner taught to screw up everything that comes to you. You order, you know, scrambled eggs, you get sunny side up. You order toast, you get French toast. I mean, it's a debacle. And he wants to see how you handle that situation. And those are like just a couple ungameable things that you have no idea that's what you're being audited on.
Unbelievable. Great, great tactics. I love it. One of the things that I wrote this down that I took from the book, John, was don't ask the customer what they want. Give them what they can't live without. And when I read that and I wrote it down, I realized that this could be one of the most important themes of an internal meeting. If you want to keep your customer experience on track, you almost need to say, hey, we're having that meeting again about asking, you know, but don't ask the customer what they want, give them what they can't live without. Are we doing that? And if we are, what are we doing? And if we're not, how can we get better? And to me, that could almost be that constant thread that tests, litmus test of the experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exercises we like to do is if someone's opening up across the street, down the street, whatever the business model is, and they have unlimited money. I mean, billions invested. What would scare you? And then we go through all those things and you list all the things and you realize, well, none of those things cost money. You didn't say anything about the espresso machine or that, you know, the car wash, every car would be car detail. You talked about, you know, how they'd make you feel. We can do that. We don't need $1 billion for that. If you look at all the disruptors, if this was 1982 and I asked you guys, you know, if you were a coffee drinking, you know, focus group, I asked you what you'd want a coffee drinking experience. In 82, no one would have said, you know, well, I'd like to be able to spend 10 times as much, order it over 170,000 different ways and get it and hang out here for, you know, 3 minutes or an hour and read a book, conduct an interview or, you know, knock out some emails. You wouldn't have gotten that and you wouldn't have gotten Starbucks.
The other thing that I want to add to this discussion is part of my heart in my business, and that was caring for your employees. John has a quote in his book. He says, never expect your customers to be happier than your employees. So if your employees are unhappy, your clients are probably going to be unhappy too. And one of my hearts in always in running businesses was to care for my employees. When you turn this great customer experience and you turn it on its axis and you point it back at your employees and you truly look at delivering this incredible staff experience to your people, what are they going to do when Mrs. Jones comes up and Mrs. Jones is having a tough day and they're going to have empathy and they're going to care for her and they're going to go above and beyond for her? And that transforms a business in my mind.
You know, you mentioned the word love and caring, both Alan and John, you did. And again, let's go back to that love word I talked about a few minutes ago. I always told people that love comes from inside out. I says, if you want your customers to feel what's going on inside the business, it's got to be in here first before it can get out. You're not going to get love from the outside. You're going to only, you know, bleed out love from the inside out. That's why I know, and you know, John, and you know, Alan, it starts with a good core culture and a great team, good purpose, continual training, and meetings and reevaluations. And God, how did we do this week? Is there anything we should change? You know, I'm a perpetual tweaker. It's a dangerous, dangerous thing to be a perpetual tweaker because you're never, ever satisfied. I don't know if I could work for a perpetual tweaker. I know a lot of people worked for me back in the day, and they probably could never predict what I was going to do next. I'll tell you that. What's beautiful about having John with us, you worked with Starbucks. How could we get a consultant, a trainer in the industry, an author, a customer experience advocate, nth degree, come on the Remarkable Results Radio podcast and tell us about all these great things? And you helped Starbucks. Can you share just a microcosm of what you helped Starbucks do?
One of the things I want to caution people, and I know you two don't think like this, but something that kind of drives me crazy is when the mentality is, oh, well, that's Starbucks. You know, we're not in their industry. That's easier for them because they're doing a $4 cup of coffee. We're doing $1,500, add-on. It's all the same. I mean, it really is all the same. And it's relative. But so Starbucks, like a lot, they were growing too fast at the time. And I always say, nothing to ruin your customer experience faster than rapid growth. I mean, I remember when we first started and we needed a receptionist, we'd interview 15, maybe 20 people to find the one. And then we found her and she was perfect. Well, fast forward 5 years and we need 50, 75 employees because of growth. Well, we're interviewing, if we need 75, we're interviewing 77. And the only reason why you're interviewing 77 is because two didn't want the job. And we hired the best of the ones that applied, not the best out there. And not only did we, compromise there, but we're keeping the C-minus player that we've been keeping for too long because we need 75 more employees, not 76. And, there's so many drawbacks to rapid growth. It's intoxicating. We all want it, but man, it's painful. So Starbucks, went through it and they got in a lot of trouble. So the first thing we did that we do with every client is we did a day in the life of a Starbucks customer, which is all of us. It's all your listeners. Whether they go to Starbucks or not, it's our lifestyle. It's that we get up at 5:45 and get breakfasts made and lunches made and kids on school buses. And then we sit in rush hour and road rage and all. And we finally get to our work in normal times. And, we're battling fires and chaos and customers and employees. And then we got to be the taxi cab driver at the end, taking our kids, pick up, drop off. So Starbucks realized that they couldn't change what's going to, if you're going to get a flat tire, you're going to get flat. If Principal Miller is going to call you about little Alan, right? Starbucks can't prevent that from happening. But what they can do is give you a 15-minute, 45-minute escape to collect yourself, rejuvenate yourself, and be Superman or Superwoman, which we're all trying to be, and get you on your way. We help them create their service vision statement that they all have to do every time. And that was put on the inside of their green apron. So for about 10 years, you go to any Starbucks in the world and you ask them to turn over the inside of their green apron was their service vision in whatever language that they spoke. And it's on the inside because it's not to be advertised. It's not to be put on the website. The only time it's supposed to be advertised or the only market it's supposed to be advertised to is to the employees. So every time I put that apron on or off, it reminds me what my job is in this interaction. Inspired moment, and then the pillars underneath. So it just helped them get back to the basics and really focus on delivering that genuine hospitality and that 90 second interaction.
I found that inside the apron fascinating, John. Great job there. You had mentioned a day in the life video. I have seen the Every Person Has a Story from Chick-fil-A, and I saw it about 8 or 9 years ago in a seminar. There wasn't a dry eye in the place, and I realized the impact and the power. And to hear you talk about it in the book, So what I should do, I promise, in the show notes, I'll put the link to this. It's on YouTube. Chick-fil-A is more than happy to share it with everybody because it just shows the caring that they have in their customer service culture. Is that something that should be part of the customer experience culture to be sure that that video is played?
Absolutely. And listen, not everyone can afford a $25,000 to $40,000 video. It could be a slideshow of pictures. We have a lack of empathy in our businesses for several reasons, and most of them are no fault of the employee, right? We talked about a lot of these. My 22-year-old technician or receptionist, they don't know what world-class looks like, okay? It's not their fault. We got to help them. Number two is that they don't know who the customer is, right? I'm fixing, or adding something to, a Maserati or Mercedes-Benz or a BMW, and I don't drive anything close to that. And they almost can give me a chip on my shoulder, right? Like, this guy should, his life is great. We look at our customers as the 1030. Or we'll call them a procedure, whatever that might be. And so all these things help us when we see what they could be happy. Highs and lows. Alan's son just got, accepted into university, right? Or he's celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary, or he just found out his mother-in-law has terminal cancer, anything like that, it doesn't have to even be extremes, right? He has a big meeting today that if he can close this account will change his business. And so when you start looking at people like that, that you now have more compassion and empathy, and you're not looking at next, our five, who's our 1030? Hey, is our 1030 here? No, it's not our 1030. It's Mr. Beach who's getting the, this done. And then we go back to Ford and that Secret Service, and he's a human being. He's not a 1030 anymore.
He's a person, not a car. He's not the 1030 ball joint. He's a customer. He's a person. And, when we stop and think about how crazy and hectic our own lives are, you can't discount the fact that the person across the aisle or whose vehicle you're sitting across doesn't have the same either good or complicated world that they live in.
And a lot of times it's both, right? And a lot of times it's just both. It's chaotic out there.
Your purpose statement, I think it was pretty much near the end of the book.
Last chapter. It's my personal purpose statement is to live an extraordinary life so countless others do. We all have seeds of potential. And I feel that the seeds that we don't sow that reach its fullest potential, we cheated. Those that are dependent on us, our family, our kids, our employees, our clients. And so I don't look at it as an opportunity. It's a right. I have to do that. Otherwise, I'm cheating those around me. And so I say, what if Nelson Mandela or Walt Disney or, whoever those are in your world, my world, what if they just said, screw it, when they were younger and says, I'm just going to be ordinary. How different our lives would be. But thank God they didn't. And then people are dependent on us to be extraordinary so we can lift them and help them live extraordinary lives. So that's my compass. It's a lot of work. It's not just a theme. I have a whole regimen behind it and more days than I like. I mean, this is my, guide that's in the book, but when I'm not living an extraordinary life, which is more than I like to admit, I can go to my plan and see what I'm deficient in and say, I got to get back to that. I got to water that part of my life because it's been neglected.
It's your northbound train. Five books. Any new one coming up?
I just came out a few months ago called The Relationship Economy.
I have it. I have it coming. And to me, that's the one that we actually need to read next. If anyone hasn't read Customer Service Revolution, you need to do it now. But Relationship Economy is all about our touchless, and we need to be seen on social media if that's where the relationship is. That's not flesh. See, I'm Italian, John. I love to hug. You can't hug on Facebook. You just can't.
Right. No. And especially with the world, the circumstances, it's now more virtual and less face-to-face. So we really got to work on, collecting for it and building the rapport authentically.
Alan, any final words for us? And thank you so much for connecting us with John.
I just want to lay a customer purpose statement out there. Well, actually, John calls it a customer vision statement. for an organization that we had, and we created it as a team. So it was the inside the apron statement, and it was, life has its priorities. You are mine. And when you look at every client walking through the door, and you know that that client is walking through with a whole set of priorities in their head, and you say, you're my priority. So it just really changed everything with our organization when we went with that statement. So
it's also measurable, right? Right. If Carm is my, you know, technician or a customer facing employee, I can watch him interact and say, Carm, you did not make Mrs. Jones feel like your priority just there. You know, you weren't even looking at her when you responded to her, or you did make her feel like your priority. You made her feel like she's the only customer you have today. And I know you're slammed and you're probably running 15 minutes late, but Mrs. Jones did not feel that from you. Love that.
What a fitting end to a fabulous, fabulous discussion here. Thank you so much, John DeJulius and Alan Beach. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Wonderful. It was a pleasure. Thanks, Alan, for the introduction.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.